This is PCJ Radio International.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Easter traditionally marks the start of the spring vacation period in Europe, with many people getting away for a week or so in a kind of ritualistic greeting to spring. However, looking out the window today, there is anything but spring in the air. It's cold, and it's been snowing. It's been a rough winter, and it isn't over yet, at least not here. But for many skiers, this is good news. Spring skiing is a big favorite, featuring good snow conditions and intense alpine sun all in one. But I fear that once again, this season will also feature fewer foreign visitors to Switzerland to enjoy it. In recent years, more and more of the traditional tourists, especially from Germany, the Benelux, North America, and Britain, have stayed away. The reason is very simple. Switzerland has become too expensive, and they're going to other, less expensive destinations in neighboring countries. One might assume that this disturbing trend would have set off alarm bells in the Swiss tourism industry, and that emergency countermeasures would be implemented in this country, where tourism accounts for 6% of the gross national product, and in some parts of the country, considerably more. Yes, one would think so. But this is not what is happening. What is happening, in fact, is that prices in Swiss hotels, restaurants, resort facilities, and public transport continue to rise, as decision makers in those sectors seem oblivious to the downward trend in tourism figures. Instead, they merrily go along, business as usual, assuming rather cynically that the shortfall will be made up by the Swiss themselves. But back to reality. You don't have to be an economist to realize that if your product isn't selling because it's too expensive, then you have to lower the price. Yes, that would be the logical conclusion. But this is Switzerland, the traditional home of high prices, caused largely by this country's lust for high profit margins and a cartel mentality that prevents any real competition. Suggesting lowering prices here is taboo and tantamount to heresy. It seems to me that leaders in the tourism-related, but also in other Swiss industries, are in a state of denial that they just can't snap out of, perhaps simply because they lack the courage to face the facts or to communicate them clearly and openly to members of their trades. The favorite current excuse, rationalization, and mantra for declining tourism figures in Switzerland is the high value of the Swiss franc against major currencies like the euro, dollar, and pound sterling. But in reality, Swiss prices have always been too high. The rise in the value of the franc against major currencies has not helped, but it's a convenient manipulation of the facts to claim it as the only cause of the problem. It is just the straw that broke the camel's back. Meanwhile, the director, CEO, as he's now so fashionably called, of the Swiss Federal Railways, the SBB as they're known in German, was interviewed on German-Swiss radio. The SBB has recorded a significant drop in passenger and freight traffic for the first time. Industry observers clearly blame this on excessively high fares, the highest in Europe. At the same time, there have been at least 8 rail accidents since January, some of them involving injuries. Some critics put the blame on what they see as a deterioration in maintenance to cut running costs, while the Swiss Rail Workers Union has reported cases of stress and overworked employees that they believe has contributed to the recent spate of rail accidents, many attributed to human failure. Returning to our SBB CEO, when the interviewer put critical questions regarding fare pricing and the cause of the recent accidents, the CEO went into a well-coached and well-rehearsed public relations song and dance routine that left the listener with the impression that it was cause for jubilation and not concern. In other words, we had another case of total denial. Unfortunately, The interviewer wasn't aggressive enough and let him get away with it. As if this weren't enough, we turn to the Swiss highways, where users have to pay a $40 annual usage tax. This also includes foreign drivers, who may only be passing through. But now, in yet another act of seeming detachment from reality, Parliament has approved the idea of raising the motorway tax to 100 francs, which is even more in dollars. Obviously, this is not going to help solve the problem of dwindling tourism. It's also not popular with the Swiss. In fact, the large Swiss People's Party has announced its intention to call a referendum on the issue if it's actually passed. And finally, the icing on the out-of-touch, in-denial cake. Swiss mobile phone charges, which are already the highest in Europe. But that's not the worst of it. We also pay double for roaming charges than citizens of EU countries do when we cross borders. In a vote a few months ago, the Swiss Senate decided not to adopt EU ceilings on roaming charges. This prompted the Swiss Consumer Foundation to launch an online campaign for signatures to warn senators of consumer displeasure. Apparently, this had a limited effect in that when the issue came up again a few days ago, the good senators decided to shelve the matter. Incidentally, but also very importantly, it was discovered that certain members of the Senate were actually linked to the Swiss telecom industry. Anywhere else I can think of, this would be condemned as a scandalous case of conflict of interest, but not in Switzerland, where the revelation got little play in the press. I've been reporting on Switzerland and its culture and politics for 43 years. As I look over these and other similar events, I cannot help but question the aptitude and wisdom of some leading politicians and business leaders who often appear to be totally out of touch with reality, or at least with the electorate, and or are in a state of denial. But considering how satisfied most Swiss say they are with the status quo, there would seem to be little hope that this state of affairs will change, and that Switzerland will remain aloof from the rest of Europe for a long time to come. As a Swiss parliamentarian once told me, change will only come when the country starts feeling it in its wallet.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure.
Right now, less than 100 people are registered as residents of this village of Indamany, characterized by its stone and slate roofs, many, many years old. I have a special guide. He's Adolf Schalk. Al Schalk is an American journalist and writer who has lived in this village for many years and has actually written a history of the village. Al, we're standing right now on a narrow pathway, which at least at this part of town, the north side of town, is paved with stones mixed with ordinary dirt. And this has a great historical significance for this tiny village.
Yes, for many centuries, this little path was the only connection with the outside world. The people had to walk on foot for about 7 hours one way to reach the bottom part of the valley on the opposite side of the mountains here to Lago Maggiore.
Now, to give us some geographical definition, Endymion is right in the mountains, situated in a rather deep valley, almost equidistant between Locarno on the one side and Lugano on the other, roughly speaking. And I can imagine in years gone by, this place must have been terribly isolated.
It was, because the road to Endymion, the automobile road, was only built at the end of World War I, around 1917.
And this road coming up is really an adventure. It has a tremendous number of curves. I think you've counted them.
Well, there are about 250 curves, including a great many hairpin curves.
People didn't tend to do a lot of traveling here.
No, they didn't do a lot of traveling, but nevertheless, the postman went down to the village to collect the mail and bring it up here about three or four times a week.
Well, let's walk gratefully down the path rather than up it, Al. How old is Endymion? How old are the oldest records?
The oldest records go back to the 13th century, but it is believed that it is certainly several centuries older. The first settlers were presumably shepherds and perhaps hunters. And much later, there are legends that bandits who used to rob people on the main thoroughfares down in the valley used to come here and hide.
It would seem like a good hideout because it would, it's highly unlikely that many people would be caught or found up here.
That's right. In fact, there is reason to believe that some people came here to escape military duty, but because in former times, the peasants had to serve in the armies of the many princes who were constantly at war.
Ciao, Tama.
Yeah, ciao.
Morgen.
Yeah.
A moment ago, we greeted some people in Swiss German. And that leads us to one of the unusual aspects of the modern story of Endymion. Half of the modern population of Endymion is German-Swiss. They weren't born here. They came here. What's the story? What's the reason?
Well, these are the so-called city dropouts or city refugees. Most of them are young people, but also a few older people who came here to seek alternative lifestyles.
We are thinking it is a good place for our children for learning the living, and because there are no cars, and they can live more in the nature.
Al and I have dropped in on Hannes and Andrea Weilenmann, and they're a German-Swiss couple who have lived up here for just under 2 years. Do the children enjoy it up here, do you think?
When I see the other children in the town, I must say yes.
We've come across walking through one of the few paths in the village here, and a herd of goats. Very picturesque, but I'm sure they weren't put here by Walt Disney. Al, what are these goats doing here?
Well, the young people from the city, the city refugees who have come to settle here, are now raising goats, whereas the former indigenous population, which is unfortunately dying out, no longer raise goats, but they're more interested in tourism.
So it's the alternatives, then, the social dropouts who've come back here to keep it going.
To keep it going and to live the life the people here formerly lived.
Are they successful at it?
To a large extent, yes. Ticinese no longer make goat cheese to the same extent as they did formerly. And so the older Ticinese are delighted. The young people are now making goat cheese.
I just realized I was turning around and looking here. We're at the very edge of the town. I mean, it literally is the edge of the, not only the town limits of Endymion, but also the Swiss frontier with Italy.
Exactly.
We can see the customs house right here.
That's already Italy.
It doesn't look logical to me. Is there any good reason?
Yes, there is. In 1515, the Confederates were more expansionist-minded than they were today, and they had many battles and conquered a lot of territory south of here, all the way down to Domodossola.
That's in Italy.
Yes. They were mainly fighting the French. They lost the battle at Marignano near Milano, and because of this defeat, they had to give up a vast area, either here, this valley, or in the area near Mendrisio. And then they had the choice, and they said, well, Mendrisio has a lot of vineyards. However, here, there are a lot of chestnut trees. Well, we have enough chestnut trees, but we don't have enough vineyards, so let's give up this area, and let's keep the area with the vineyards. And then the people from Endymion says, oh no, we have the right to stay here within the Swiss Confederacy because there are documents to prove that we belong to the Diocese of Locarno. And this protest by the people of Indemene was accepted, and so for that reason the border was drawn illogically across this area here.
European history can be very quaint indeed.
Yes. Faccio senza documenti.
Grazie, buongiorno. We just asked if we could pass for a moment and go walk into no man's land. In fact, it's a strange border crossing here, Al. We are standing directly on the frontier between Italy and Switzerland. There's only a plaque here on the road saying that you're on one side or the other, but the customs posts are actually a couple of hundred meters on either side. In the past, Al, there must have been a lot of smuggling going on here in the days when it was really worthwhile.
Well, the people of Indemene mostly smuggled between during the two world wars, when the men were not able to go out as guest workers, because for centuries the living here was so hard that the men had to go out as guest workers to earn a living, and sometimes they were away as long as 10 months in a year.
What did they smuggle mostly?
They smuggled mostly cigarettes and liquors, and in fact, when there was a shortage, rice.
And the border crossing is not 24 hours here. You better be, if you go over on the other side, you better be back by 9 o'clock in the evening.
9 o'clock in the evening or after 7 o'clock in the morning.
Al, let's take two or three steps over the imaginary line separating two countries back into Switzerland.
Okay, we've been abroad. Let's go back to Switzerland.
We have a little bit of a snowfall. We're recording this in the month of November. And yesterday when I came up, it was very warm, sunny, very mild, southern climate, Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. Now things have changed and we have some snow flurries.
The real snowfall doesn't really start until the middle of January.
Does it really get cold up here in the winter?
It sometimes does, but on the other hand, that again is unpredictable.
The car that just went by has license plates from Varese. That's the province on the Italian side. There seems to be a lot of cross-border traffic here, certainly from the Italian side to the Swiss.
That's true. That's because the gasoline is cheaper in Switzerland than in Italy.
And they come over and just fill up.
Yeah.
Why did you come to Indemene, Al?
Well, I guess I'm a dropout myself. I'm a journalist by profession, and I got tired of the hectic life and the requirements of journalism, and I decided to come here to live in peace and quiet. Now I'm more of an all-around freelance writer.
It would seem to be a perfect atmosphere for that kind of work.
It is if your temperament is suited for it, but not everyone can stand the silence.
I went to an art school in Zurich. I visited the art school for 2 years. I was going to go into textile design, but could not finish off because I felt it would become too boring. I didn't find it would become a job I could practice for a longer period of time.
Hans Peter, or Ami Amacher, and his wife Ruth. How do you survive economically up here? How do you keep busy?
I guess you'd say I'm a one-man construction company. I do roofs of the houses. I did my first stone roof or slate roof this year. Most of the work I do is for the tourists that come from the German-speaking part, which makes me sad because the locals don't seem to trust somebody that comes from the German-speaking part. There's a big gap.
Would you describe this situation as almost hostility? Is that too much?
That's too much. But I had often the feeling that I'm not allowed to walk around here and to be here. It took a long time to get rid of that.
Do you have any real dialogue with the people here? Do you get involved in conversation with the locals? Or is that even possible?
Real dialogue, I think I have with one woman who is not accepted from the other locals. She is a local herself, and she is not accepted from the other ones. And this situation makes that she looks for strangers as we are to talk with. But with other people, It's not possible.
It seems that you're all individualists, but you have one problem. All of these individualists have come together. Is it difficult to get along with each other? Because you are individualists by nature, you would like to be alone.
In general, I'd say yes. We have difficulties getting along with a number of people, but there's another point. Most of the people that came here, most of the people I knew or I know that came here, came as singles or as couples without children. And the fact that there are so many children here now could form a community or could start a better communication between those individualists who are here for egotistical reasons, thanks to the children, are starting to communicate in another sense.
Al Schalk, as we've been doing this program in Indemene, we've heard the so-called alternative life seekers, or as you call them, the city refugees in this hamlet or tiny village of Indemene. And I've had the feeling myself that to a certain extent we've heard only one side of the story, and we tried to get the other side of the story, for example, from the mayor of the town, and he refused flatly. We've even had a certain amount of hostility in doing this reporting work among the, let's call it, the alternative community itself. What's the problem up here? What's going on? What is the story behind the story?
Well, I think you have to understand the psychology behind the whole thing. Of these people have had bitter experiences, and they feel their whole lifestyle threatened. They feel like strangers in their own village, because German is spoken almost as much, if not more, than Italian. And many of the city or urban refugees do not bother to learn proper Italian. There are conflicting interests. The native people, to a large extent, have lived in dire poverty in former times, and now they see the chance of prosperity. So their interests are more in the direction of tourism and prosperity. The refugees, the outsiders who come here, are looking for the exact opposite, so there's a clash of interests.
You were here before the city refugees came on the scene. How do you feel about this whole phenomenon yourself, having seen it all develop?
Well, my feeling is that the people we have here now, the alternatives we have here now, are on the whole a wonderful group, with some exceptions. And I think there is a tremendous potential for a good working symbiosis. I think it will require a great deal of patience, a great deal of goodwill, and I think that some of these young people really are trying very hard to cooperate. I think the most important thing is that Indemene must, by all means, keep its genuine character and not lose its the qualities that have made it what it is. I think that's the most important thing. At the same time, we must provide enough jobs for the people who are living here to make a living without destroying this character, because I think Indemene is more close to Bethlehem than it is to Disneyland.
Al Schalk, American journalist and writer and long-term resident of Indemene, thank you very much for the tour of this unique Swiss mountain village.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.